Toothpicking, probably to alleviate the pain of gum disease. Indeed, these fossil grooves match the toothpick grooves in the teeth of several modern Aboriginal populations. It's enough to warm every dentist's heart. The first tools weren't just for preparing food, hunting, or fighting. They might have been used for dental hygiene as well. This moment of science comes from Indiana University with production support from the Brabson Foundation. Today's program was prepared by Eric Sonstrom with help from David Freyer at the University of Kansas. I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports, the Illinois men's basketball squad hopes to follow up their win this week over number 25 Michigan with another win, this time over 7th-ranked Michigan State. The Illini will travel to East Lansing to play the Spartans tomorrow afternoon. Illinois is 3-1 in the Big Ten this season, while Michigan State is undefeated. Illinois senior guard Calvin Brock has made several visits to Michigan State's Breslin Center, and he says it can be intimidating.
Oh, man, it's tough. The student section is out there before you get out for warm-ups. They know your whole bio, everything about you, and they're talking trash an hour before the game. It's just a tough environment to play in, and we just got to be ready and focused and do whatever coach says to try and be successful.
Illinois basketball coach Bruce Weber says Brock will need to have a lot of energy tomorrow in order to guard Michigan State sophomore Kalen Lucas, or the little fellow, as Weber calls the 6-foot Spartans point guard. Lucas has averaged 21 points per game and was named this week's Big Ten Conference Player of the Week. The San Antonio Spurs have signed former Pacers forward Austin Crozier to a 10-day contract. Crozier was waived by Milwaukee on January 6th. After appearing in 11 games, he averaged 3.3 rebounds and 2.2 rebounds. The 12th pick by Indiana in the 1997 draft, Crozier had his best season in 1999-2000, averaging 10.3 points and 6.4 rebounds as the Pacers reached the NBA Finals. The Chicago Blackhawks finish up a 3-game homestand against the New York Rangers tonight. The St. Louis Blues will host the Chicago Blackhawks tomorrow. The Blues are coming off a 5-2 win over the Colorado Avalanche yesterday. The Chicago Cubs and utility infielder Ronnie Cedeno have agreed to a 1-year contract worth $822,500 and avoided salary arbitration. The Philadelphia Eagles are just one game away from reaching the Super Bowl, even though it's been an up-and-down year for the team. Coach Andy Reid and quarterback Donovan McNabb have been the focus of fan ire. Mike Pesca has this report.
As if Philadelphia needed another underdog. But this year, a certain southpaw known as the Italian Stallion was upstaged by the Eagles. The team's low point, the equivalent of Rocky having his locker cleaned out by Mickey, came in Week 12 at Baltimore. There was Donovan McNabb in his 9th year as starting quarterback. McNabb, who took his team to the playoffs more times than not, who made the Pro Bowl more often than not. Standing there on the sidelines, not the field, to the shock of the Fox announcers.
Wow.
That's shaking up
things. No, this is huge. This is a storyline that is absolutely huge, and sitting down Donovan McNabb for the second half of this football game.
The Philadelphia media and fans were exasperated with their quarterback and their head coach, Andy Reid. And yes, the team won the week after the benching, and sure, they won again the week after that and the week after that. But by all rights, this season was in the coffin. It was just like the Eagles to deny their fans the final nail. During that time, ESPN reporter Sal Palantonio actually heard many of his fellow Philadelphians worrying that short-term success would just delay necessary personnel changes. He didn't buy that argument.
I think all sports fans are unfair in general, not just in Philadelphia.
Palantonio knows from an objective standpoint, the Eagles have been a very good football team ever since McNabb took over as quarterback. He also knows it's hard for Eagles fans to be objective.
They're invested emotionally and financially in a way that you don't find in many other places.
And so when the Eagles did sneak into the playoffs and win 2 games, it may have been hard for the players to believe the fans were back to stay. Eagles guard Sean Andrews says the fans want to win, and so does the team, but still.
You have to have some thick skin playing here or you won't survive. It's like
we appreciate fans being at training camp and being so close, but even being that close, they really don't understand, I don't think, the hard work that goes in. Not too many fans have been here at the NovaCare complex.
Actually, there were a couple fans at the Eagles NovaCare training facility earlier this week. Michael Fritz gained access as part of a promotion. He wore his Brian Westbrook jersey. He was a beaming believer, in contrast to his state of mind a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I was on all the blogs, the hate mails, and everything else. I just couldn't believe that how the season was going. It was just going down the tubes. I left him for dead.
Now Fritz says he's come to love McNabb all over again. For his part, the quarterback seems happy, easily brushing aside the contention that he can't do the things he did 5 years ago.
None of us can do things that we did 5 years ago, not including you guys. I mean, some of you are writing slower than you did 5 years ago. Stuff you're talking about in the paper just don't make sense. Some of you dressing kind of funny.
If the assembled media weren't fully charmed, the fans seem to be. The turnaround has been, well, there's a scene in Rocky IV when the champ, having just defeated the Soviet destroyer, addresses the Moscow crowd. Rocky says,
"If I could change and you could change."
You know what? Let's let Mike Fritz sum it up.
Oh, yeah, I was definitely wrong. I mean, they've really turned around. I take back everything they said. Obviously, Andy knows a lot more than me.
Well, until Monday morning. Mike Pesca, NPR News.
The economic downturn has been bad news for most colleges. Endowments have plummeted, and students have had a tough time paying tuition. But the last few months have been good for one small school in Los Angeles. Occidental College is celebrating the man who has become its most famous alum, Barack Obama, even though his time there was brief. One of Occidental's less well-known alums, NPR's Ben Bergman, returned to his alma mater and has this report.
Up until recently, my proud alma mater's great distinction was being the location for the TV show Beverly Hills 90210 and for the 90s classic Clueless, starring Alicia Silverstone. We've also had some famous alums, former Congressman Jack Kemp, Ben Affleck. Oh, and there was some guy known as Barry who enrolled as a scrawny freshman in 1979. Whatever became of him?
At this defining moment, change has come to America.
Oh yeah, he did all right, I guess. Barry, as he was known in those days, was mentored by politics professor Roger Boucher.
I taught Barack Obama his first politics course.
Boucher gets asked a lot these days if he saw something truly presidential in the young student from Hawaii.
No, I cannot say that I looked across my class and said, now that guy someday will be even in the Senate, much less the president. But he stood out. And he was very articulate.
When Mr. Obama wasn't in the classroom, he spent hours in the gym playing pickup basketball with classmate Brian Newhall.
Vividly remember him in the gym being very thin. We both thought we were very good. We played against each other quite a bit. Driver, herky-jerky would be the basketball term, and he was very left-handed, but athletic, fast, competitive. Not such a good outside shooter.
It's become folklore around campus that Mr. Obama wasn't good enough to make the team. That's not true, says Newhall, who now coaches the Occidental team.
Would have been an excellent Division III basketball player, but just chose to study and focus on his academics.
Mr. Obama also made another choice after his sophomore year. He left Occidental and transferred to Columbia because he has said he wanted a bigger school and to be in New York. That, along with the fact that Mr. Obama rarely mentions Occidental, haven't stopped the school from claiming him, though. It points out his former dorm on tours and has devoted a special section to the president-elect in its bookstore.
This is the display of Baroxy wear.
Baroxy wear, a play on Occidental's nickname, Oxy, explains politics professor Derek Shear.
One of my favorites, which I've already purchased for my grandchildren, is the pants that you put on young kids around their diapers that say, "Change we need, Barack Obama." There's the "Yes, we can" top for good-looking women. And we have beautiful Obama Oxy hats, which are already selling out.
The school also hopes to capitalize on Mr. Obama's victory through alumni giving and admissions. Occidental President Bob Scottheim says the president-elect could be especially helpful now given the recession.
We hope that this will be an offset to that and that the Obama bump will counter what offset private colleges might experience.
And any Obama bump would be amplified with a campus visit. It hasn't happened yet, despite a meeting between some of the college trustees and Mr. Obama during the campaign.
The invitation is open to him at his convenience. His response to the trustees was, in fact, I will come when I'm in the White House.
And now that he's almost there, Occidental is waiting to see if Mr. Obama follows through on his promise. Ben Bergman, NPR News, Los Angeles.
More than any other presidential candidate in recent memory, the president-elect has been a master of branding. His campaign had a bold logo and simple mottos like hope, change, and yes, we can. Now some companies are hoping to ride Mr. Obama's wave by selling their own brand of change. NPR's Tamara Keith has more.
Ice cream maker Ben & Jerry's is known for its topical flavors, so perhaps it isn't a surprise that their latest treat is called Yes Pecan, as in Yes We Can, except with nuts. Ben & Jerry's is describing them as roasted nonpartisan pecans surrounded by amber waves of buttery ice cream.
Good morning. Would you like to register with IKEA?
I can't right now.
No, that's fine. You just take it home with you.
Okay.
You design your own Oval Office.
At Washington, D.C.'s Union Station, furniture store IKEA set up its own version of the Oval Office for a campaign it's calling Embrace Change 09. There are even campaign buttons.
We've created a replica of the Oval Office using IKEA furnishings.
So it's a little different.
It's a lot different.
Marty Marston is the public relations manager for IKEA in the United States. The Swedish company made its name with sleek designs and cheap bookcases, and there are quite a few of those in this Oval Office. Marston says IKEA's advertisements around Washington, D.C. include slogans like, "It's time for fiscal responsibility," and "Change begins at home."
We really believe that change starts at home. And if we think about what's going to happen in the White House, I mean, that certainly is the most iconic home in the world. And change is about to occur there.
Commuter Vanessa Porter grabs a catalog as she runs off to work. The not-so-subtle tie-in to the inauguration and President-elect Obama doesn't bother her a bit.
I think it's a great idea. What, over a million people are going to be here this weekend? Why not? Everybody else is.
Including possibly, though not officially, one of America's most venerable brands. Have you seen the new Pepsi logo? Ken Wheaton is an editor at Advertising Age.
I think whether Pepsi meant it or not, or whether they'd like it to or not, there is sort of a blatant visual symbolism there. Their new logo looks, you know, quite similar to Obama's logo.
Pepsi officials deny the connection, but there's no denying the bubbly drink maker has picked up on some of the themes of Mr. Obama's campaign.
And the world is made of energy, and the world is electricity.
In this television ad, words and Pepsi logos flash on a brightly colored screen. It includes the phrase, "It's time for optimism." There are signs, too, declaring, "Yes, you can," and "All for one." The O's are replaced with Pepsi logos.
There's this hunger, this need for hope and optimism, and it aligns well with our brand.
Frank Cooper is vice president of portfolio brands at Pepsi Cola.
We didn't set out to kind of align ourselves and say, let's deconstruct Barack Obama's campaign and see if we can understand how he developed that as a brand. It just so happens that as we looked at the underlying trends in culture today, we saw the same thing.
Coincidence or not, Adonis Hoffman, senior vice president at the American Association of Advertising Agencies, isn't surprised this is happening. He says something similar happened with some of President Reagan's campaign themes.
We saw a little bit of that creep into some commercial marketing and commercial messaging, but my recollection, and I was around during those days, not anything as widespread as what we've seen with President-elect Obama's brand and messaging and the resonance that it has had and he has had with commercial marketers.
Of course, there are also risks, like upsetting the millions of people who voted for someone else. For NPR News, I'm Tamara Keith in Washington.
Well, it's an understatement to say the election of Barack Obama and his coming inauguration have drawn enormous attention. That's especially true in his home state of Illinois, where people started making plans to see Obama take the oath of office months before he was even elected. In Chicago, congressional leaders have been flooded with requests for tickets to the inauguration and questions about how to get to Washington, D.C. for the big day. As it turns out, many of those requests have been directed to the office of one congressman and on to the desk of one staff person. Ben Calhoun reports.
Tiama Romero is deputy chief of staff for Congressman Danny Davis. Her desk is in his office on Chicago's west side. And these days, she has three phones on it.
I have two cell phones.
One of those cell phones is reserved for political activities.
And then I have a congressional phone for our congressional work.
There's also her regular office phone. 1, 2, 3.
It's not unusual for me to have all three phones ringing at the same time.
Generally, things are busy, but not like this. See, a while ago, Davis told Romero he wanted her to organize a bus trip to the inauguration. Pretty soon, word got out. Looking for a bus to D.C., call Davis's office. Other congressional representatives started referring people to Romero, and the calls started pouring in.
When we first started, it was probably maybe about 500 a day in his office.
500?
I mean, the phones were ringing off the hook.
Romero says it's been this way for months.
Just to put some numbers on things, can you tell me how many emails you're getting about this on a daily basis?
Maybe 200 emails a day.
What about voicemails?
Oh, I have to have one of my interns just empty out my voicemails like every 15, 20 minutes because I have so many phone calls from people.
Originally, the bus trip wasn't supposed to be too big. Davis told Romero, book a couple buses, mostly for volunteers who'd worked for Obama with Davis.
We started with two buses.
That did not last.
We're now at 10 buses.
Originally, Davis reserved 30 hotel rooms in Washington. The trip now includes 7 hotels in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Another indicator of overwhelming demand, Davis plans to give many of his inauguration tickets away through a public drawing. The waiting list is now 12,000 people long. Romero says organizing the drawing for tickets, the hotels, the buses, she's had a chance to hear the thoughts and emotions that are drawing people from Obama's home state to Washington. She compares it to the election of former Chicago mayor Harold Washington.
You know, when Mayor Washington ran and won, wherever you were at, wherever you were standing, what room, whatever room you were in, you felt a part of it. And that's how I feel from people. They feel that just to be there in D.C., to feel the energy and the excitement that they are part of it.
But don't get the idea that Romero's job is all feel-good. High demand and limited supply is a recipe for disappointed people. The same afternoon that I stopped by Romero's office, so did Dr. Sabrina Kendrick.
You try to do everything right.
Kendrick is clearly disappointed. She booked two spots on the Davis buses, one for her, one for her mother. She says because she signed up early, she thought she'd get first dibs on inauguration tickets.
I live in the district. I work in the district. I voted for Congressman Davis.
Romero breaks it to Kendrick that she'll have to try her luck in the drawing for tickets. Gently at first.
At the end of the day, you know, some people are going to be mad and some people will be understanding.
And with a little more force when it becomes necessary.
How do I say this?
Eventually, Kendrick gives up and says she'll try the public drawing. That drawing is scheduled to be held this Saturday, one day before Romero's 10 buses pull out of Chicago and head east. Not long after Kendrick leaves, Romero turns back to check her email and return phone calls.
Hey, it's T.